Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. We'll have Gentry Estes from the Tennessean joining the program at 7:30. We'll get his thoughts on the Calvin Ridley signing and what that means for the Titans. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for his weekly visit from 8 to 8:30. We got a lot to get into with Charles, so looking forward to that coming up next hour here on the program. So the Titans signed Calvin Ridley. We've gone extensively over that contract, that deal, what that means for the Titans. We'll continue to take your thoughts on that. Mason Rudolph signed as backup quarterback yesterday. And Joe, an underrated move yesterday. Nick Folk back in the fold here with the Titans. We talked about that the other day. Nick Folk, what's going on? Why has he not been signed? And now he's back with the Tennessee Titans. So they get their kicker, their receiver, their backup quarterback. And earlier this morning, for those who missed it, NWI also back in the fold as well, coming back to the Titans on a one-year deal. So Rand Carthon has been busy, but Joe, it was good to see Nick Folk back in the fold yesterday.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing. That is a good thing. You've been fretting about it,
I
so
have.
you can ease your mind now. No, I mean, he was fantastic last year, so you still have the eventual need, and not eventual, not being too long from now, need to find the next long-term kicker who's actually good enough to stay on your team and be your long-term kicker. But I guess you could, just like we're talking about the AJ Brown thing, I guess that's kind of like a J. Rob problem too, right? So, I mean, Rand has been here a year, but it does feel so much like it's his first year, doesn't it? Like
It does.
it's like his first and a half year.
It does. It kind of feels that way. And look, I like, for the most part, what the Titans have done this week. It could be a disaster. I don't know. Like, I mean,
Sure.
Calvin Ridley may not work out. I mean, it's hard for me to picture Cushenberry not working out based on what he's done to this point in his career. But who knows? Maybe, I mean, Awuzie may be a terrible signing at corner. We'll see. But I like, for the most part, what they've done this week, and they position themselves. I mean, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting offense, right? I mean, I think it was going to be anyway with Brian Callahan coming in and the new things they're going to try to do. But I think a big part of the offseason is trying, and we've talked about this, trying to position yourself the best you possibly can. Yes, to win, and yes, to try to get in the playoffs, and yes, to do all those things. But I think on the macro level for the franchise, positioning yourself as best you can to really determine what you have in Will Levis. And you're not going to figure out everything this next season, but you're going to figure out a lot. Like, you're going to figure out a lot of what he's made of, the fit with the new scheme, the fit with the new coach. You know, does he have the right stuff, the right DNA to be a quarterback? And you know, is he good enough? That's what it's going to come down to. Is he good enough to be your franchise quarterback moving forward? And again, you're not going to find out the answer to every single one of those questions this next season. But I think you need to position. What would be a shame is if, you know, halfway through the next season, you were looking around and we were having the same discussion about Will Levis we were having last year, which is, yeah, I like some of the stuff he's doing, but it's hard to really know because he has no chance about there to, you know, when he drops back to pass or the skill position's not good enough or all these things. Like, if you dress a, you know, left tackle in the draft and you hit on that, you're going to feel better about your offensive line. Your offensive line is going to be better than it was last year. And with Ridley and Hopkins, like, you feel pretty good about the skill position right now. So on the macro level of the franchise, I like what the Titans are doing in terms of putting weapons around Will Levis to determine what he is and what they've got at that position moving forward here.
Yeah, I'd love to know what Brian Callahan thinks of this group and in comparison to his last group. Remember, with the Bengals, they've had offensive line struggles. I mean, they
Oh, yeah.
got to a Super Bowl despite offensive line struggles. But you know, Burrow, Chase Higgins, Mixon, Perrine, compared to Levis, Hopkins, Ridley, Pollard, Spears, and you know, it's probably laughable to it would have been laughable to even have that thought until they added Ridley. And I'm not saying, I mean, like you said, we'd have no, I mean, we know Burrow's great. We don't know much about Levis. We know Levis has ability, and we're going to find out. I think a year from now, we are going to have a lot more, clarity on where it's going. But, you know, and Chase is in his prime, elite, top, absolutely receiver, and that's different. But, you know, this is a pretty good tandem on paper, talent at receiver, and I like the backs. So I guess the one thing missing is, you know, they had C.J. Uzomah, and he's out there, by the way. So is it time to go get him?
Or Bowers.
Well, then, yeah, there is Bowers.
Just
that'd
forego,
be...
forego the left tackle position.
Yeah, yeah. No, but, I mean, it's to me, they're a left tackle away from, on paper, having a chance to really be something next year. And yes, any of these things could turn out poorly, of course. I do also think that, and we mentioned the kicker, the offense is way different. Man, that defense still needs a lot of work.
Yeah, defense needs work. And, you know, like I said, do I think the Titans are like some playoff team now? Probably not. I mean, who knows, right? I mean, look, we were having discussions last year about the Houston Texans being dog water, and they go win the division and win a playoff round. So would it be the world's biggest surprise if the Titans came out next year and made the playoffs? No, it would not. Would I pick that based on what they've done to this point? Probably not. But I do think the offense, you know, if things do go well, and Hopkins is basically what he was a year ago, and Ridley is basically what he was in Jacksonville this past season, that's pretty good. That's pretty good 1-2 punch. I mean, it's not an elite 1-2 punch. That's a pretty good 1-2 punch that you got there with your wide receiver group. If Pollard is closer to the player he was 2 years ago rather than last year coming off the injury and getting healthy, then that's a pretty good back that you've got. And then you've got Spears coming into his second year. So, you know, it's not hard to get to the offense could be pretty good if some of those things work out. And, of course, Levis has to take another step and has to put in that type of work. And, you know, I have no doubt he'll put in the work. We'll see if that translates to success. But, like, the Titans offense, I think, is positioning themselves where they're at least going to have a chance to be something heading into next season, which, I mean, you know this, Joe, but you know, pretty early on last year, we knew the Titans offense did not have a chance to be anything based mostly on their line, but also at their skill position outside of DeAndre Hopkins as well at the wide receiver group.
Right. Yeah. So the Texans, we thought they'd be bad. They had been compiling picks, getting drafted some young players. So they'd been helping the roster for a bit, but didn't know the impact of the new coach and really didn't know the impact of the rookie QB.
Yeah.
I mean, if Levis is good next year, then yeah, why couldn't this be a playoff team? Right.
Sure. Yeah.
Like you're right. The bigger thing is finding out about him and charting your course. Like Rob says in the text line, thank you. Everybody keeps talking like, okay, we got our QB. We don't know anything about Levis really. Yeah. I mean, the Titans are, I mean, I think that it was definitely more good than bad last year. And it just was, those conditions were just so bad that you have to put an asterisk on all the results. So if you protect him, and I just can't imagine that this skill group is going to be not, I mean, they're going to at least be good, right? Pretty good. It's hard to imagine. They bring in a head coach who's a play caller, who is an offensive coordinator, who this is what he does. He's an offensive schemer, you know. Then I think we are in position here, you know, that everyone can kind of find out probably pretty quickly about Will Levis. Not final conclusion or all that in 1 year, but they're doing the things around him if they get the left tackle to really get good information this year.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Gentry Estes from the Tennessean coming up at 7:30. We'll get his thoughts on the Calvin Ridley signing. Coming up next, another big win for the Preds last night, 11-0-2 in their last 13 games. We'll break that down and take another look at the standings. Preds doing really well for themselves right now with the way that they're playing. More on that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
Puck tip back for Sissons. His shot knocked the stick out of the defender, and then the Predators get the rebound down low, and Zucker has his first Predators goal. It's 4-0.
Jason Zucker on the board last night. The Preds win 4-2. in Winnipeg, and that is a 13-game point streak. They're 11-0-2 during that span. And, Nick, I believe I'm correct on this. They have not lost in regulation since February the 15th.
That is correct, so
we're coming up on a month. Tomorrow will be a month since they've lost in regulation. Obviously, a huge stretch here for the Predators. Joe, I thought they played great last night. They got up 4-0, really, for the first 2.5 periods. They were taking it to the Jets. And then after it was 4-0, they basically just kind of hung back. And Winnipeg got a nice redirection goal and then one with 10 seconds left in garbage time to make it 4-2. But the Preds, I thought, for the most part, dominated the game last night. And look, Winnipeg did not have Mark Scheifele. So that is, he's obviously a big piece to what they do. But the Predators, I think, deserve a lot of credit for going on the road, winning the game the way that they did. And I just thought it was more of the same, Joe, of the way that they played. Nyquist was unbelievable last night. He continues to play great. Forsberg, obviously, with another goal. And Roman Josi is playing like a Norris Trophy-level defenseman right now. I mean, the first two goals they scored, a crazy pass from Josi from his own end to Nyquist along the boards. And then he makes the play on the second goal to get the puck to Kiefer Sherwood, who scores right in the slot. So, really, some of the themes that have been pretty consistent over the course of this winning streak, this point streak, were on display again last night. And by the way, UC Saros was really good again last night. So all systems go, continuing to be the case right now for the Predators.
That freaking Josi pass to Nyquist was stupid.
It was.
I needed the 1996 Fox glowing puck, to enjoy, the track of the puck. But
yes.
No, man, Josi, and I heard some of the post game. I was enjoying some Max Herz post game last night, driving a home from Bridgestone Arena, and hearing Brunette talk about him. And it's, and he said this before, but it's kind of like, man, I think some people, maybe even the league, are taking Josi for granted a little bit, And if you look at his second half, consider, and he said it. I mean, this system was not comfortable for him early on. It's very different what some of the things that are being asked of him, but great player is going to adapt and figure it out, and I think we're seeing that. And man, is he a difference maker right now. Is he a great player?
Well, he reaches the 50 assist mark again last night, so I mean, he's, the points are coming hot and heavy for him right now. He's figured it out and he's playing great. And look, I remember when they, a lot of attention this offseason when the Predators made the moves they made. Obviously Ryan O'Reilly was the big fish, right, of the players that they brought in. I remember them signing Gus Nyquist and thinking to myself, okay, I mean, Nyquist is, he's a good player. He's not a great player, but he's a good player. He's got 58 points in 67 games, 40 assists, 18 goals. And he's been unbelievable. Like, he's been really, really good. And I think last night was the 60th consecutive game that they've had that top line together, Forsberg, O'Reilly, and Nyquist. And Nyquist is playing awesome. Like, he's 34 years old, and he's playing, if it's not the best hockey of his career, it's right there with it. I mean, what's his season high in terms of point production? I think is 60. I mean, he's gonna move past that. He's going to end up with, 66, 67, close to 70 points this year if he keeps playing the way he's playing. I mean, Nyquist has been unbelievable for this team.
He's at his career high, yeah. Actually. He's at 58. The most he ever had in a season was 54 with the Red Wings. He had 27 goals and 27 assists. So that was really early on in his career now as well. He's also
He had 60 in 18-19. Wings and Sharks.
Okay.
So dang it, Nick.
Oh, the combination got me because he got traded. My dang it. Anyway,
we were having a great segment, Nick, and then you messed up.
Then you came
the stats
in there and ruined
God
it.
Dang it.
Ah, that's just what I do. Also, here's something different that I will share. Nyquist is also the fourth ever Preds player that's 34 years or older to score at least 55 points in a Preds season. He's the first since Ribeiro did it back in 2014-15. So there you go.
You made up for it. Way to go.
That's a good stat. That's a very good stat. Yeah, Nyquist's been very good. He's also, like, how we talk about, like, Gensler or whoever. It's very true, right? Like, if you play with great players, it's amazing how the production can change. And not to
for sure
take any credit from him at all, and I'm not trying to do that, but that look, it's been a great situation for him, and he's taking advantage.
That play he made last night on Forsberg's goal was ridiculous. Just to get to the loose puck and drop it between his legs, and of course Forsberg finished it off. But I mean, he's playing great. And look, you know, when they put the Cole Smith, McCarron, Sherwood line together, I was like, okay, well, that'll be a couple game thing, and then you'll have to you'll put right. it back. I mean, every game. I mean, at some point, I mean, they've been together this whole stretch here. I mean, at some point, you look at it and you just say, man, that's a good line. I mean, it's consistently been a good line, and they keep finding a way to put the puck in the net too, which you don't really expect from that group. But Sherwood with another goal last night. They had a couple other good looks where they could have scored. And then I do think it's big to see, you know, for Zucker to get one to go for him last night. I still didn't think, you know, Sisson, Zucker, and Bevilier generated a ton. But good to see Zucker get one to go for him last night.
Yeah, that's another thing Brunette talked about after the games. You know, you feel like Zucker in particular, you know, you're coming in new, and it's all this stuff, and it's you're just kind of throwing a guy out there. Last night felt like, okay, now he's in there, and it's all clicking for him too. So could end up being a real nice ad there.
Could be. And then on the back end, then this is where it starts to get a little hairy. So Fabro's out for 2 or 3 weeks, and then Stastny gets hurt last night too. So Stastny took a hit in the corner and started grimacing, holding onto his shoulder, and left the game. So what's his status going to be? You know, I mean, if he's hurt and he's out, are they going to call up somebody else and play them and continue to leave Tyson Barrie on the bench? Like, how many people have to get hurt for Tyson Barrie to get back out there? I think is an interesting question, but look, first off, until he got hurt, I thought Stastny was playing great. And in a league where a lot of people can skate really well, he jumps out with his skating.
You can see him. You notice can see him.
It. I mean, his skating is ridiculous. So hopefully he's not hurt too bad, and that he can be, you know, kind of back in there on Saturday when they play Seattle. But we'll see what happens there. But if not, then all of a sudden – a back end and a blue line that's been pretty fortunate for the most part this year, Joe, on the injury front, starting to pile up a little bit if Fabro and Stastny can't go. I mean, Fabro's not going to play Saturday, but if Stastny can't play either, it's going to be interesting.
I mean, how many suits does Tyson Barrie have? He's always got a nice one on, you know, but you're asking a lot of the guy. Yeah. I mean, at some point, I mean, it is kind of nice to have. I mean, the guy can play.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah. He's not been good defensively this year, but I mean, right. You know, he can play, and he can help you on the power play and all those things. But it is – when they brought up Stastny the other day, I was like, well, they're not bringing up Stastny for him to not play. So I do wonder if Stastny's hurt and they bring up, like, Del Gazzo or whoever it is. Tyson, have fun, buddy. see you over there on the bench.
How like, if you're him, how difficult is it to, like, be prepared, even in just in terms of – and I understand he's been skating and all that stuff, but just to be thrown into a game at this point. I suppose as a veteran, difficult. You got to be ready, though.
It'd be pretty difficult. I mean, it's been over a month since he played, right? So, I mean, it's got to be pretty difficult. I mean, and, you know, I'm sure a big part of him was expecting / hoping to be dealt at the deadline. And when that didn't happen, it's kind of the reality of, well, you know, barring a bunch of injuries, that's probably it for me this year, too. So, the mental game and staying involved
exactly.
That way.
Yeah, I mean, he at some point recently he had to have come to terms with, okay, that's it, you know. We'll try again next year, and now it may be like, hey, Tyson,
we need you to play.
Here's your skates.
Get in there. 615-737-1025. Our phone number. Big win for the Preds last night. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessean, and we'll get his thoughts on the Calvin Ridley signing and what the Titans have done to this point in free agency. That's coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keiser here with you on this Thursday morning. Titans making some moves, some big moves in free agency, and to help us talk more about that, we go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Gentry Estes from the Tennessee. And Gentry, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm told Nick I'm tired, but I'm here. I always feel bad trying to talk about getting up early and being tired when it's you two. Because I marvel at your ability to do this every day, especially after night games the night before.
Well, sometimes we don't do it every day, and we're both late to work like we were on Tuesday. Yeah,
exactly.
I heard about that, yeah.
Of course. Everybody's heard about that.
Of course. So Gentry, Calvin Ridley signed 4 years, $92 million, $50 million guaranteed. What did you make of that move by the Titans, and what do you make of the fit of Calvin Ridley with this group?
I mean, I think you have to like it, right? Because the last few days they've checked some boxes and they were active and they were doing things, but I think you were just kind of waiting for that big splash, right? Without knowing for sure that it was out there, that was how this was going to go. But this was certainly a big splash, and to go get the best receiver still available in free agency, I think said a lot about where this franchise is trying to go and how different this is going to be offensively with Brian Callahan. I think this was a move certainly to help him, to help Will Levis, to make this offense more explosive and fun to watch. I think it's going to be a lot different. In terms of Ridley, I mean, he's obviously a real talent and a guy who could be a game changer for this offense. I don't think he's a sure thing when you look back at the last few years. And, I think that's the only thing that really gives you some trepidation about this when you look at how much they're spending to get him. But it's a big-time move, and it's an indication that, I think you're going to see a tackle with the first pick in the draft, or their first-round pick in the draft.
Yeah, so Gentry, and of course you covered Alabama for a long time, so you've been very familiar. Yeah, with him and for a long time, he was obviously a great player there. We were talking last night at the SEC tournament, he stood out even there among some of the great receivers they've had. What are the concerns with him, do you think? Because obviously the gambling thing was incredibly stupid and it was incredibly costly for him. He broke his foot, the year before that. But do you think there are concerns, that beyond just whether he still retains his speed and things like that?
Yeah, I think you look back in the last three seasons, he's played 22 games. Now, a lot of that was the suspension, but I feel like, injury concerns. And just the fact that he's 29, maybe a little bit older than you would have liked to see this kind of guaranteed money. But, look, it's a good move. I think the Titans had to spend this money in a way to keep up with what's going on in their division. If you look around right now, the Texans are really getting a lot better. And I think the AFC South is transforming quickly. And this is what happens in this league when you have these teams that have quarterbacks on rookie deals, which is kind of turned over to where all these teams are doing this. So a team like the Texans with C.J. Stroud, they have money and they're spending it. And I think it's good for the Titans. They have cap space and they're being willing to spend it. And I think you expected that going into this process, but you didn't quite know what it was going to look like. And then early on, you're like, are they going to be willing to really shell out money to get somebody like this? And the fact that they did it, and to take this guy from the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think was a big move and something that I think signals intent as much as just gives them a very good player. I think they're serious about changing their offense and playing a different brand of football. And I think it's we probably knew that, but it makes it a lot more clear.
So Gentry, what do you think of the other the two other big moves on the offensive side of the football they've made this week? One with Tony Pollard coming in at running back, and then of course Lloyd Cushenberry up the middle at center.
Yeah, you had to check that box at center. That was just something they needed to do. And I think it was smart on their part to go ahead and get that done. The money that's being paid to interior offensive linemen in this cycle suggested that you needed to identify your guy and go ahead and move. And they did that. I thought that was a good thing. And I feel like, Tony Pollard's a good player. He's always going to be contrasted to Derek because they brought him in essentially to replace the guy in Derek Henry. And that's maybe the one spot I feel like with a lot of these other additions, you could make a case that you're at least equal to what you had, Mason Rudolph, Ryan Tannehill. But that's the one spot with Pollard, and it's no fault of Tony Pollard, but they got a little worse there just because I think you look at it's Derrick Henry. This guy's a Hall of Famer, and he can do a lot of things. But, you know, Tony Pollard's a much different player, and I feel like he's going to fit in well with what they want to do. I think, they had a lot of options there at running back. There were a lot of good players available. They could have gone a lot of different directions. And it's interesting to me that they grabbed a guy in Pollard who, you know, he's productive, but it's a guy who's similar to kind of what you had in Tajay Spears. Certainly, again, an indication of what I think they're going to try to do offensively. It's going to be a whole lot different from what we've seen.
So I feel like this team, Gentry, really needs, because I think Autry's a lot. I mean, at some point, Autry's going to fall off, but I bet you next year he's kicking everybody's butt for the Texans. That's just what I expect at this point. And Simmons has had not only Autry, but when Tier Tart was right, that was a really good compliment as well for Jeffrey Simmons. So I feel like that's, to me, like whatever money they've got, and, you know, they've got money still to spend, I feel like they've got to get somebody there. Is there anybody there? First of all, I guess, do you agree with that? Is there anybody there you really like who's out there?
Well, I think Armstead for 49, that he's been linked. That would probably be – that's certainly a good guy. I would have liked to have seen Danielle Hunter. He's going to Houston there with Danico Autry. That's going to be a lot of fun to deal with twice a year. I agree with you on Autry, by the way. I feel like that guy's just going to be terrorizing all the other AFC South teams into his 40s. This just appears to be, because he did it to Indy the last few years. He did it to Titan before he got here. Yeah, he's that guy. But the problem with when you go into the free agency with so many needs, you're constantly evaluating, okay, is this something we can throw money at to fix? And yeah, they do have a lot of money and the opportunity to do that, but it's like a blanket that's just too small. You know, it's going to leave your feet uncovered or what, you know. I mean, they have so many needs right now. And now I think it's to the point where you got to look at it and go, okay, can we get this in the draft? I mean, I think tackle's going to be that way. And I think – I'm not sure D-line is, though. And I agree with you. I think that's kind of a need that's out there. I think cornerback may be another. Cornerback, safety, secondary help. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see another inside linebacker. We can sit here and list off probably 7-8 things that they still need, and that's kind of the problem here.
So, Gentry, to that point, so going back to the Ridley signing, you got Hopkins and him as your 1-2 punch heading into next year. To me, it makes it pretty clear what you should do at number 7. I mean, you got to find a left tackle, and that's where you're going to do it, is in the draft. At 38 in the second round, and I know everybody's going to say best player available, and that's fine. I get that. But would you still strongly consider drafting a wide receiver that you feel like can be a really impactful player for you down the road, even though you still have Hopkins and Ridley for this season? Is wide receiver still a priority to you with one of those first two picks?
I think it probably is, only because there are so many good ones available. Or only so many. I think that's something that needs to be pretty high on the list. But I've heard people say that they're for sure going to go tackle 1 and then wide receiver 2. I think you absolutely have to have a left tackle with that first pick. I don't think it's a given that they are going to go receiver with the second pick, at least not now. But yeah, you got to look at it. I mean, these guys are a little older, and I told Joe last night, I feel like this Ridley move, the player this could end up helping more than anybody else is Treylon Burks. Because if he's healthy and out there, defenses are not going to pay any mind to him now. He's got some other guys to take away a lot of the attention, and I still feel like, I know you guys don't agree with me on this, I don't think. Robbie, I don't think you do, but I wouldn't give up on Treylon Burks yet. I think he could still be a pretty good player, so I think you have to kind of consider that in the whole process too. And you're bringing back NWI this morning. How about that? NWI will be a tight
big deal.
Bury the
big
lead.
Deal. Big
just,
deal.
We just keep burying the lead. Yeah, no, we've already determined Burks traded the Chiefs and has a 2,000-yard season with Patrick Mahomes. So, but no, I'm with you. No, I think this could be good for him. All right, I'd be remiss, Gender, if I didn't ask you here quick about Jerry Stackhouse. We were both there last night. We both wrote columns. I just read your column. Very good column in the Tennessean. And I'm with you. I think last night, first of all, was he said two like open the vein pressers. One was after they beat Tennessee last year, and then last night there wasn't enough of that. But I think you and I may differ a little bit. I just really don't know where this is going. It did. You could definitely take last night like someone who knows he's going to be fired, but you feel more confident that that's going to be the outcome here after last night?
Yeah, I do. I feel like I would be surprised if he's back at this point. I think it just so many things, and you hit on this as well, Joe. It's just the negativity. You called it Butch Jones-esque, and it is kind of like that, where it just gets to the point that I just think you have to make a change to get your fan base back. The negativity on this is to a point where I just believe it only gets corrected with a change. And but the press conference last night was a Stackhouse that I don't think we've seen, just in terms of how reflective he was and the way he presented himself. It would have been nice to, I think for fans, it would have been nice to have seen some of that sooner. But at this point, you know, you're 5 years in, it's going the wrong direction. I just feel like we're going to see a change.
Well, Gentry, awesome stuff as always. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Take care, guys. See you.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant. You can check it out every morning here on the program. We'll do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Bottom line is, like, you all have to figure it out. But we're framing this as Tennessee over here and the NCAA, you're bad, you're going down. And it's not that simple.
Like, I don't understand.
It's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out every morning here on the program. We even got a little bit of Rex Road's English accent in that one, which I'm a big fan of. Need more of here on the program. Joseph, the floor is yours.
When was what, like, that random British accent thing? What was that from? What was I talking about?
I don't remember. But
oh my God.
I just know we need more of it.
Why do people listen to this crap? All right. They listen to it for Robbie and Nick. All right. I just want to pump. You know I'm going to use this opportunity to pump up another athletic story, of course. But Cal Tucker and I, we worked very hard for actually a few weeks to tell the story of SEC men's basketball going from – really quite an embarrassment a decade ago. I mean, they were getting three bids, 3 out of 4 years, and it was basically just Kentucky and everybody else, and it was not good to what it is today. Gigantic increases in investment, like massive. Great coaches, way more great players, much better facilities. I mean, you can go across the league and find that just about everywhere, at least a significant upgrade, if not, you know, new arenas or new basketball building. Vanderbilt, it's got a new basketball building. Mike Trangisi came in. Dan Leibovitz came in. Scheduling, officiating was bad. And I know, SEC officiating. We're going to have some complaints this weekend on some calls, but they totally revamped that too. And if you just look at everything that goes into, like, trying to make a conference good at men's basketball, it's as good as it gets right now. The Big 12 and the SEC are the top two leagues this season, bar none. There really isn't a close third. And if you want to look at a trend, the SEC and where it's been the last few years, and then the ACC and the opposite direction it's gone, this is not a coincidence. So, yes, the SEC needs one of its great teams to break through and win it all. It's been since 2012 with Kentucky. Quick aside, the Big Ten has been since Michigan State in the year 2000. But still, that's fair criticism. Yeah, it is wild. But that's a fair criticism. And there was a lot of comments on our story about that. Like, wait, you guys are talking about how awesome this league is. Where's the Natties? Where's the Final Fours? You know, more teams need to make the Final Fours. But the SEC has several teams playing in Nashville this weekend who are capable, without smoke and mirrors, of getting to Phoenix and the Final Four, and that is no small thing. So now let me ask you, is there any irony that on the day Kyle and I ran this story, that I went to Bridgestone Arena to cover two Wednesday games, smallest crowds we'll see all weekend, and the freaking Wi-Fi didn't work on Press Row? Look, man, I don't want to be that guy, okay? I don't want to be that guy, but I'm gonna be that guy, okay? The network's called It Just Means More. You can't call your Wi-Fi network. It just means more and make all this progress and get these flowers and then not have the freaking Wi-Fi work. Can you?
Is their Wi-Fi network really called It Just Means More?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I switched to the regular Preds Media Wi-Fi, which normally works fine for me. I fired off a tweet about this whining last night, you know, because I'm gonna keep whining. You know this. And I just went my phone on roaming and fired off a tweet. And Chris Martel's like, well, I think the Preds Wi-Fi is like, no. Do you ever have a problem with the Preds Wi-Fi?
On occasion, but not often.
I mean, I never do. But okay, so the Preds Wi-Fi didn't work either. So then I switched to my hotspot. Nope, nothing. I mean, the stats on the video board last night, you know, they had like the scoring numbers for players. That went out for almost the entire Vandy, Arkansas game. Like, no one, it was like, you know, free internet watching this game in there. Like, what's going on? Now, is it a huge deal that I wasn't able to throw in some posts in our live blog at The Athletic about the games? No, but I was expected to do that, and people on Press Row are going to be working all weekend, and they need Wi-Fi. So, Greg Sankey, I ask, please take a break from getting the SEC 8 automatic bids in the next playoff and guaranteed buys through 2040 and ruining the NCAA tournament, making it 347 teams, and fix the damn Wi-Fi! Thank you.
I'm glad that we could at least mention Greg Sankey by name. He's been under fire the last couple of weeks here on this program. Greg,
this needs
fix
to be
the Wi-Fi.
This needs to be, and if I see Greg over there today, this needs to be priority one, Greg. This, I'm sorry, drop everything and let's fix the Wi-Fi. Thank you.
Can I offer an additional mini rant at the two of us? Because in retrospect, we really missed the boat this week. You know, we had Corey Curtis on the program on Monday. And we talked about NFL free agency, a whole lot of different things. We never asked him if he referred to Lionel Messi as Carlos Messi.
Oh, my God.
A huge missed opportunity on our front. And now people still making Carlos jokes on the text line. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, we had Corey right there on Monday and never asked him if he thinks that Lionel Messi's name is Carlos.
That is ridiculous. What a week for us. Yeah, I mean, we're letting him just keep making just Packers jokes, and we could have been asking about Carlos. Wow. Well, let's all remember for next week, right? Let's all remember for Monday.
Get the freaking Wi-Fi fixed at the SEC, and let's get down to brass tacks with Corey on Monday about whether or not he thinks Leo Messi's name is Carlos, because I'm hoping he does.
Jared says, Carlos Westbrook Aquino. Just basically just put it in front of any name, and it just, it works. It's comedy gold.
Have re-signed Carlos Westbrook Aquino. CWI. Welcome back, baby.
CWI. My goodness.
This beautiful stuff. We'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Calvin Ridley signing and what we've seen in NFL free agency to this point. Looking forward to that. The NCAA tournament right around the corner. It's time for you to sign up and play the official 102.5 The Game Bracket Challenge, brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook, Twin Peaks, and Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Go to thegamenashville.com/bracket challenge or the 102.5 The Game app and sign up to play for your chance to win 4-day passes to Bonnaroo. Brackets will open after the teams have been selected, coming up on Sunday, March 17th. Also, it is SEC Tournament Week, as Joe Rexroad has referred to. Tune in to 102.5, 106.3 The Game for updates of the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament this week, presented by ESPN Bet Sportsbook, Toyota, and Guinness. We'll have Charles Robinson coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.